present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. Now, before we begin, as this program is recorded in advance, I need to make a quick announcement just so that we cover our bases for the edit. So we've obviously had some very exciting royal news. And we'd like to congratulate the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge on having a beautiful baby girl. Baby boy. Twins. Triplets. Lost treasure of the Sierra Madre. Right, let's start with a cutting from the Admart Town and Country magazine read by Zeb Sains.
Black Torrington Summer Fete. The companion dog show will commence at 1:30 p.m, open to all, and dogs can be entered on the day.
Our thanks to Rachel Hudson for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkin and John Richardson. Opposite them on my left, Vicky Pepperdine and Jeremy Hardy. Hugo, who has found out that cigarettes are bad for your political health?
This is a story about Lynton Crosby, who is a strategist for the Conservative Party and also a lobbyist on behalf of tobacco companies. And there's an outrageous suggestion that this whole thing about plain packaging in cigarette packets could be somehow linked to his other role, which is obviously, Lynton Crosby is obviously a fine, upstanding man, has obviously done nothing wrong. Obviously, he has completely compartmentalised these two parts of his life, and I'm really amazed we're even talking about it.
So the whole thing's gone away now, isn't it? We're not going to have cigarettes in plain packets?
Not in the immediate future, no. Which I think is a shame. I mean, people keep buying cigarettes if they're in anything. You know, they could be actually packaged inside diseased lungs, and people would still be like, yeah, all right, £8, whatever.
Also, the pictures on the packets are now the only education some medical students can afford, so...
I always go for the smoking when pregnant harms your babies ones, because that's not really going to affect me.
Cameron did nothing, because he doesn't dispel anything now. Whenever he's criticised about anything, like Miliband will stand up and say, have you had conversations about lobbying, or have you been lobbied? And instead of answering the question, he'll just say, why don't you just go and kiss Len McCluskey on the bum? And that's pretty much his answer to everything now, isn't it?
But do you think lobbying is a sort of disgrace in a democracy? I was wondering if we couldn't have a whip around. We could pay somebody to tell David Cameron what we actually think about him.
But then isn't that lobbying?
Oh. Curse you for paying attention, John.
Perhaps the answer to funding of political parties would be that they all have plain packaging and they're not allowed to advertise in any way. If the Liberals weren't allowed to make any promises, it wouldn't make any difference.
No.
And if you just judged people on what they look like, you'd look at Cameron and think he just looks like a hairless Tudor monarch. I think it would be quite horrible if he were running the country. And if you looked at Miliband, you'd think it would be quite depressing, but he might mean well.
Farage.
You'd think that the country was going to be run by a former RAF pilot who changed sides and fought for the Germans.
David Cameron has denied being unduly influenced by his chief election strategist, Lynton Crosby, who also runs a consultancy lobbying for clients, including tobacco firm Philip Morris. The Prime Minister's spokesman insisted that David Cameron had not been lobbied by Lynton Crosby before sparking up a cool, relaxing woodbine. During Prime Minister's questions, Ed Miliband clashed with David Cameron. Miliband asked a series of tough questions given to him by his sponsor, Play-Doh. Leader of the House of Commons, Andrew Lansley, said the government was not seeking to prevent or deter lobbying, but to ensure there was maximum transparency provided by Everest double glazing. 2 points to Hugo. John, who doesn't have many friends with benefits?
It must be... This will be the benefits cap then, will it?
Yes.
And Ian Duncan Donuts. the benefits cap has gone nationwide now, but it's gone out quite quietly because... It's had massive public support. It's over 70%. But that's because they basically stopped people who were busy in the street and trying to get to Nando's or something more important and said, do you think that people on benefits should get more money than people who work? Which really isn't what this is about. It's like stopping people saying, do you think baddies should be punished? And most people would say yes. And then if you go around shooting kids because they've stolen a biscuit, it's not really what the point was. And I don't, but then people who are on benefits, they're not happy. They're not. There's this image, I think, because of headlines where you get, like, once a year you get a fat bloke on a water slide on the front page of the Daily Mail next to the headline, like, this man claimed £12 billion a second because he said he didn't even have a head. And there's a view that, like, everyone on benefits is a cheat. And really, it's most people are miserable. Even if they're on 26 grand, you've got several kids who you can't afford to feed, and they're screaming at you all the time. They're not going on massive holidays. So I don't see what the point of this cap is. It's broadly a good idea to cap what we spend, but they're going to save, like, £110 million a year, I think, most of which will go on rehousing families who are going to be homeless because they can't afford to live in a house anymore.
And IDS has been using these bogus figures, saying that he's successfully forcing people into work, because that's how you get people into work, is you force them into it, and that works well. And people have said, actually, those figures don't show that. And he said something like, it is my belief that that is the case, or something like that. And he said, you cannot prove that there is no link. You think that doesn't mean that's what people say. If you say things like, I don't believe in UFOs, people say, yeah, but you can't prove there aren't UFOs. And I say, it's not my job to prove it. It's your job to prove that you were abducted and given internal examination by a Martian. it's like someone says, well, you know, it's just what I believe. You know, I think there must be an afterlife. It can't just be this. And you say, why not? And they say, well, that's just what I believe. And, you know, I mean, we're all entitled to our opinions. No, you're not. We're not entitled to opinions that are manifest rubbish.
I did like it. They heard Ian Duncan Smith on the Today programme, and he said the great talk about thousands being made homeless has not come true. Do you think we're 4 days into the policy? Give landlords a chance.
The great irony of all this is you've got MPs sitting there going, it's outrageous that people are paid so much money out of the taxpayers' pocket for doing nothing. And you're like, well, I suppose maybe that's quite a good point. Perhaps you could have some kind of debate about it. They're like, no, sorry, we're off on holiday for 2 months.
A cap on benefits of £26,000 per year has been rolled out nationwide by Work and Pensions Secretary Ian Duncan Smith. Mr. Smith famously once stated that he could survive a week on benefits, and no doubt he could, using just his own grit, determination, and his millionaire wife's trust fund. Ed Miliband took the hardline opposition stance against the policy by saying, if it works, we'll support it. 2 points to John. Vicky, whose report has left some hospitals warded off?
Ah, yes. So, OK, this is about Jeremy Hunt's putting hospitals into special measures. I was going to say Beverly Keogh report, but it's not Beverly, is it?
What's Bruce.
It called? Bruce.
If you know him well, I believe Beverly is perfectly fine.
So he has been putting these hospitals into special measures because obviously there is serious concern about what they're calling avoidable deaths. And so they're all being given scores like good or terrifying, etc., to book yourself into or be unfortunate enough to arrive at. And there's a new guy who's taken over from Beverly, or Bruce, as he likes to be called, who's called Richard, which is innocuous. So he's called... I've got a lot of facts at my fingertips. He's called Richard Somebody. OK, you look him up. Basically, he has taken over from Bev, and he is going in. He is going in and looking at NHS hospitals and going, oh my God, I would not come here. But what they're not doing, they're getting teams of people. So they're getting like doctors and nurses, carers and patients, and people who are good at investigating, apparently. So that could be Miss Marple, I suppose, or any private dick who fancies going in. And they're going to be talking to the staff and the patients and staff. And so we will finally get to hear what doctors and nurses think about the NHS, because, you know, they haven't been trying to express their opinions for absolutely ages, have they? But the great news here is there's been loads of politicking around this whole thing, and apparently it's all Labour's fault, all of this.
Well, it was amazing watching Jeremy Hunt. He was fighting with the Shadow Health Secretary, Andy Burman. It was like watching two ventriloquist dolls suddenly come to life and fight over the wood polish. It was the most...
I was listening to them talking about all this on the radio, and they had someone on, I think it was Bruce Keogh, is that you said?
Bev.
Bev. It was Bev, but it may not have been. It was someone behind this report was talking about it, and they were saying what he wants when he looks at a hospital. He goes, I want to find a hospital that, you know, my parents could go to, my sister could go to, her children could go to, my great nieces could go to, and I was thinking, what's wrong with this family?
Yeah,
Jeremy Hunt's incredible, isn't he? You go through a point of really reading about what someone's done, and then every time I see him, he's done something that everybody agrees he should be hated for. Mm. And then he just pops up again, smiling again, 3 months later in a different job. And he's done something else. He'll pop up in just another country one day. He'll be president in the USA. And he'll have bombed Australia. And he'll just think, oh, I remember that guy. Aww. He's really done well for himself.
He called on Annie Burnham to resign. And you think, you know you're in trouble when the king of hanging on to their job thinks that you should go. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt has sent hit squads into 11 of the worst hospitals following a report by NHS Medical Director Sir Bruce Keogh, which singled out trusts with unusually high mortality rates. Few people have read Sir Bruce's report in its entirety, although sales could pick up when it's revealed to have been written by J.K. Rowling. Much of the Conservatives' ire has been directed at Shadow Secretary for Health Andy Burnham. If you're not familiar with him, he's the one who looks like Ed Miliband when viewed at the correct aspect ratio. 2 points to Vicky. Jeremy, listen to this. That was the Danish national anthem.
I thought it was like Coronation Street or something.
It does double as a soap theme in Denmark, I have to say. Jeremy, why does this country need me, especially as I'm foreign?
Well, by the way, welcome to our country, Sandra.
You have all been so kind.
Yeah, well, basically, as we all know, immigrants are good for the country. But the Office for Budget Responsibility have said this. And bizarrely, they said that without immigration, there is a risk that all of the gains brought by George Osborne's economic policies would be wiped out, which would be terrible, those gains being wiped out, wouldn't it? Because there's been those gains from George Osborne. There was the one where the thing was closed down. Which was good. But they basically said this, and obviously it's true that immigration makes a place, because without immigration, you know, everything would close at 5 o'clock and the whole country would smell of boiled cabbage. But obviously immigration makes the place better. But politicians fall over themselves and battle with each other to sound more hostile to immigrants than one another. What they say is they're listening to people's concerns. They're basically feeding people's fear of immigrants, but they say they're listening. But most people's concerns are based on myths. If you do a survey and ask people, how many people do you think are immigrants? Most British people will say, everyone apart from me and my direct family. Even people who are themselves immigrants. And I've done it myself, because I'm not from London. It has to be said. I left suburban Surrey and moved to London 31 years ago. And I say I have the right to do that, because I believe in the right to freedom of movement. And had I not done that, today I would be living in the constituency of Michael Gove. That alone entitles me to indefinite leave to remain. Because I live in South London, have done for 30 years, but I find myself mourning other people coming to South London, thinking, oh, God, you know, Brixton's changed. It's overrun with white, middle-class people who work in the media. It's awful. It's not like London anymore. I mean, the whole character, the whole Caribbean nature of Brixton has changed. I mean, you go out to buy a yam or a plantain, and there's some pop-up restaurant with locally sourced food where the veg man used to be.
The fact is, foreigners who live in the UK often pay more taxes. I just repeat that for Daily Mail readers. I said pay more taxes, not drive more taxis, just to really clear.
It is weird when people who are immigrants start complaining about other immigrants, but yeah. Maybe it's a sign of how well they've integrated that they've become so small-minded and insular.
But this is like a one-generation problem, isn't it? Because now is the only time we have a generation who were promised really good pensions and told that this country was just for them. And then there'll be a generation when you try and explain a pension to them, it will blow their mind. Because did you know you used to reach an age and the government paid you to just do what you want, play golf and have a dog? It'll absolutely blow their minds.
But we risk living in a country of old people, or the Isle of Wight, as it's currently known.
I was on the Isle of Wight this week.
Where are you
and
doing?
I thoroughly would love to disagree with that statement. However, what I don't understand is how the food on the ferry has been allowed to get into the state it's in. If I know anything about old people, It's that they're like nice food and they don't expect to pay for it. And I paid £8.25 for the worst fish and chips I've ever had in my life. And she knew it was bad when she put it on my plate. The batter was an absolute disgrace.
You always have fish and chips at the seaside and you always think it's going to be good, don't you? Yeah, and it seldom is. And you think, why? Just because fish live locally, it doesn't mean that they're, you know, freely giving advice on the way they should be battered and fried, does it?
I was in the sea. I wasn't even at the seaside. Yeah, I was on top of the sea at the time.
Yeah, should be.
Literally, like, reach out over the side and fry it up.
Maybe it's because it's such a hot time at the moment. The fish are just overcooked in the sea.
Thing is, with the ageing population, you can't tell what's climate change and what's just old people moving to the coast so that the edges of the country are bending downwards, giving the appearance of rising sea levels.
My partner and I stayed on the Isle of Wight, a very jolly time. We went to a festival when I was performing, and I said to the hotel, I wonder if it's possible to book some dinner at Hop State this evening when I'd be finishing my show. Well, chef leaves at 8. I said, well, perhaps he could pop something in the oven. Well, he's the only one who's got the health and safety certificate to turn the oven off, so... So anyway, they finally agreed, Hop State, and we knew that it was a very big deal because our table had been set in the foyer by the front door. And the chef was sitting in his anorak with it done up. The Treasury's independent watchdog, the Office of Budget Responsibility, has published its annual Fiscal Sustainability Report. And who amongst us hasn't waited for it with bated breath? The Office for Budget Responsibility, or the OBR, as the kids call it, was Cameron's brainchild. It's a bit like Michael Gove's brainchild, but without the glowing eyes. At the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and John have got 4 points, but Vicky and Jeremy are in the lead with 5. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC News magazine.
A few pioneering chefs are trying to revive interest among the Australian public in eating kangaroo. When I heard they were offering it, said one local diner, I jumped at the chance.
And our thanks to Chloe Lees for sending us that. Hugo, which parliamentary scrapper complained about unsporting comments?
This would be Maria Miller.
Mm-hmm.
She is the Culture Secretary. She has written to the BBC demanding to know what's happening to John Inverdale. He described the woman who won Wimbledon, whose name I just can't remember, as...
Andy Murray.
That's the one.
Beverly, as we like to call him.
Yeah.
As not a looker. And there was uproar. And now Maria Miller has written to the BBC to demand what his punishment is. But she has also been complaining about the Golf Open at Muirfield, just outside Edinburgh. And her complaint is basically there's a big golf competition happening and she's boycotting it because it's happening at a club that women can't join. Which is a bit odd because it's ignoring a far better reason to boycott it, which is that it's a big golf competition.
If you're banned from attending something, is a boycott the most sensible thing to do? If they say you can't come here and you go, I'm not coming here.
That's a good point.
That
actually.
Is a very good point.
Yeah, I hadn't thought that through.
No. I would have thought a minister in this government who's complaining about sexism at the BBC is probably not looking close enough to home, really. Because, I mean, she'll be saying that and all her male colleagues will say, oh, here she goes again, obviously hysterical. It's either the period or the menopause. What's wrong with her? Oh, somebody strike her, she's hysterical.
This week, Cameron's pledge that a third of his ministers would be female is looking unlikely to happen. The Cabinet is now at a record 10-year low for women. And I quite like the Times quoted one male MP as saying, if you're white, middle-aged and male, you haven't got a hope of getting in the Cabinet. Yes, that's so, so true, you myopic git.
There was a time where there were more people in the Cabinet called David than were women. And I mean, golf is just the most depressing thing in the world. I mean, I grew up in Edinburgh, as you can tell by my accent. And one of the only accents I can do is the kind of Edinburgh golfing accent, where men called Angus and Douglas wear purple jumpers to go on the golf course because they're quite the wackiest man in the Residents Association. And it just makes me want to shoot myself in the face, honestly, these people. So, yeah, the least of golf's problems is the fact that it's sexist and Maria Miller should be leaving the BBC alone.
I always love having a thought about the late lamented Alan Corran. I gave Alan for his 60th birthday, I think it was, I gave him golf lessons. I thought it'd be good for him to get out of the house and not endlessly sit writing and smoking. And he came back from his first lesson and said, well, that was a bloody nightmare, toxic. What a hideous, hideous game that is. And as for those bunkers, it's no wonder Hitler died in one. Uh, Actually, I quite like this. The Daily Mail, bless them, they supported Maria Miller's stance. Its front page trumpeted Minister's War on BBC Sexism, and then if you read the rest of the paper, which was a trial, on page 15 it revealed its nickname for the New Today presenter, Michal Hussein, Dishy Mishy. Lovely, isn't it? I've just remembered, during the Second World War, because...
Well done, Sandra. You Danes were plucky in your resistance to the hawk.
No, just think about the golf thing. The golfers carried on playing because they're bonkers. And so they had special rules in the Second World War. And one of them is a player whose stroke is interrupted by machine gun fire or the simultaneous explosion of a bomb may take the stroke again. But there's a penalty of one stroke.
Still not fun to watch.
No. The Culture Secretary, Maria Miller, has written to the Director-General of the BBC to criticise the sexist remarks made by John Inverdale about Wimbledon champion Marion Bartoli. Maria also used her letter to criticise the BBC's coverage of women's sport, and I'm with her on that one. There's enough bloody sport on as it is. Maria Miller will also be boycotting the Golf Open this week as it's being hosted at Muirfield, a men-only golf club. Muirfield is officially called the home of the Honourable Company of Edinburgh Golfers, open brackets, except those with fallopian tubes, close brackets. 2 points to Hugo. Vicky, which letter proves someone should go back to school?
This is about a senior member of the Taliban writing a letter to Malala, who's obviously the schoolgirl who was shot for trying to go to school. Well, it's just very bizarre, the idea of getting a letter from a terrorist, sort of basically sort of apologising for trying to shoot you in the face. We all have one of those. So he has sent this very, very badly written letter in which he is trying to sound more erudite by quoting, I was going to say Russell Brand, but it's actually Bertrand Russell.
He may have confused the two. That's perfectly possible.
That's very true. So she got this letter sort of slightly apologising. And it had just been her birthday, hadn't it? Mm. Malala's birthday. And of course she did this unbelievably, fantastically brilliant speech at the UN on her birthday, on her 16th birthday. It was like, somebody said to me, what did you do on your 16th birthday? I went, I rode round Richmond Park on a bike swigging from a martini bottle. So we're a little bit different, she and I.
It's pretty satisfying to get a letter from people who have tried to kill you because you're learning to read and write, and then their grammar's awful.
That's it.
What I liked is apparently they attacked Malala because she was smearing the Taliban, not because she was trying to get education. Because what a hilarious misunderstanding. She's probably chuckling even now.
Yeah, it was kind of like, yeah, that's just not why we shot you. How bad you're making us look.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of people do you think we are?
But that's the thing about terrorist attacks, Hugo. You always forget about the terrorist's feelings.
Yeah.
So true.
Seems to have got left out. 16-year-old schoolgirl Malala Yousafzai, advocate for education rights, has received a letter from the Taliban expressing regret for attempting to assassinate her last year. They sent a letter because apparently Moonpig don't do sorry we tried to kill you cards. The letter was instantly snapped up by the world's media, an incoherent rant filled with spelling errors and grammatical mistakes. The Guardian was one of the first to report it. Jeremy, who said to err is human, but to tweet is divine?
Pope Francis. Yeah, the new Pope. He's on Twitter. And they're all a bit, you know, you think, what's he going to tweet? Anyone hanging out in the Vatican area want to meet up? Or but he just, it's just these kind of Deepak Chopra fridge magnet spirituality one-liners, you know, those kind of like bogus spiritual sound bites. But it's the kind of that with a slightly Roman Catholic tinge. But basically, if you follow him, you get an indulgence. Mm. And I just thought, what's a papal indulgence? And I can imagine him just sitting there in his Park and Old recliner eating some, you know, Turkish delight, you know, that horrible Turkish delight in chocolate. Mm. Or maybe indulgences that they're going to have wafers with dips at communion. You know, and he'll hand it to you and say, nachos of Christ. So I don't know what it is. I think you get to spend less time in purgatory, on the assumption that we're all going to purgatory for a bit, because we're all sinners, so we have to go for a bit of purgatory. But if you follow him on Twitter, you get half an hour knocked off. Or you can do some community service instead of purgatory. You can put some cones in central reservations in a chain gang.
I always wanted to open a deli in the Middle East called Cheeses of Nazareth, and I just thought it would do well.
Fries, that was a Turkish delight,
fries,
wasn't it? Fries,
yeah.
That was the one covered in
chips. It's lovely, you need to keep it in the fridge. I had a deep fried one once. You can take them into a chip shop and get them to batter them and deep fry them. Delicious,
good
absolutely
tip.
Lovely.
Good tip. Yeah.
Pervert.
Are you...
what happens if you unfollow the Pope? Do you have to spend eternity on MySpace or something?
I stopped reading messages on Twitter because, you know, you try and be helpful to people and you say, I am doing a gig in Pontedawe at the Arts Centre on Friday or something. And people tweet back, what time is it? And you think, look, don't try and solicit me in some kind of to and fro. Look it up. You're obviously online. You have the capacity.
What's up as well is when you tweet about a show and people come because they've seen your tweet, they sort of come up to you afterwards and it's like you've begged, like they've come as a mate. So someone came up to me after a gig last week and they said, we saw your tweet, so we had something else we were doing, but we thought we'd come to this instead. And I'd been absolutely crap. And I really felt like, oh, you were going to have a barbecue. And now I did a message and I've ruined your evening. Absolutely. It's ironic, someone encouraging the Pope, encouraging people to log on to Twitter to avoid spending time in purgatory, because they're very similar.
It's very true.
A lot of time goes by and not a lot goes on.
Apparently the Pope only follows 8 other Twitter accounts and they're all his own in other languages. Well, vanity was a sin, I think. I don't get Twitter. If I want to tell 50 people I've never met that I've had herring for breakfast, I'll just stand in the middle of a bus and shout about it. No.
You have herring for breakfast?
Yeah.
We've tried to get her up. We've made herring patches out of plasters and bits of pickled fish and stuck it on her ass to try and wean her off, but it's not. It's not.
A lot of people I know are addicted to herring. They find they can save money by rolling their own.
That is a 2 more points for a herring-related joke. Terribly pleasing. From next week, Roman Catholics will be able to seek forgiveness for their sins just by following the Pope on Twitter. Sinners will be able to qualify for indulgences, a reduction of the amount of time they spend in purgatory by following the events on television and online, which sounds like hell, frankly. It's the first attempt by the Vatican to embrace new technology since they fitted an 8-track in the Popemobile. At the end of round 2, the scores are Hugo and John have got 10 points and they are in the lead. Vicky and Jeremy have got 9. Before we start round 3, here's a cutting from the CNN Sports website.
This week, John Sinnott examines the complex relationship between football managers and their number 2s.
And our thanks to Ian Windridge for sending us that. Hugo, listen to this. Hugo, who was given Shorts Shrift this week?
Shorts Shrift?
Yeah.
All of us, because it's hot.
Well, it is hot, yes. But I'm not going to give you a point for saying it's hot.
Oh, yes.
Vicky knows.
Yes.
Vicky knows.
Some boys didn't wear shorts.
That's it.
They wore skirts instead protest that they weren't allowed to wear shorts. Is that right? They're in Wales.
Yes.
Because it's apparently the hottest July in 300 years. Hmm. And I don't know how they can possibly know that. But there you go. And, you know, the railway lines are buckling and the M25 is melting and we're all kind of generally falling apart. And people are taking their clothes off. I was on the train just the other day, on the tube, actually, and there was a man opposite me, a fat man, and he was only wearing shorts.
Oh,
And there was, like, sweat rolling down here.
Oh.
And there was this sort of globule of sweat that got caught in the hair just above his nipple. I was on the Piccadilly line, which you'll know well, and just at Arnos Grove, it bursts out of the tunnel and into the sunlight. And I was worried that the sun was going to shine into this sort of globule of sweat and form a kind of prism and perhaps set fire to his chest. But that didn't happen.
I'm glad.
I imagine that guy's now telling a story. He goes, I was on the Piccadilly line the other day, this guy was staring at my nipple. I got on at Piccadilly, all the way through Arnos Grove, he was just licking his lips and staring at my nipples.
The public health officials have advised people to stay cool and drink plenty of fluids, and I thought, well, I'm glad they've said that. I was going to sit in my greenhouse in a duffel coat eating salt. Oh, do you think they spent ages going, now, how should we word this?
Is that thing true, that if you're wearing a vest keeps you cool? Because men in very hot countries always wear a singlet under their shirt, and it's one of those counterintuitive things that are just supposed to be true. Because my mum would always come out with these things, like, you can always get burnt in the sun, be careful, because it's deceptive. You don't have to be standing right in, it can be cloudy at night, you can be indoors in bed. You can be dead. And you can still burn.
What happened to those boys? I hope they were punished. Because I know we're all having a laugh about this, but a rule is a rule.
Yeah.
That's exactly the sort of thing at school I would have just said, no, do you know what, that's stupid, we're just going to get in more trouble, we're going to turn up in skirts, we're going to look stupid, and you might get in the papers a bit, but you're not going to get round the problem. We're not allowed to wear trousers. We can form a group, and we can lobby the headmaster about wearing shorts, but this is a short-term measure that is going to just end in detention for all of us. And that's why I was so popular at school.
In the end, because they were banned from the local golf club in their skirts.
Yeah. Boys used to be made to wear shorts, didn't they? Yeah, some mums wouldn't let boys wear long trousers until they were 12.
I suddenly remember that at my primary school, they had to wear shorts, and then in the winter, they weren't allowed to wear trousers, and some boys came to school with, like, woolly tights and shorts.
We had to wear shorts in Edinburgh.
Did you?
No tights.
Did you get to wear woolly tights under them?
Well, I tried, but no, I wasn't allowed, no.
Shame.
When I trained, years ago, I trained as a lawyer, and in those days, women were not allowed to wear trousers in the Inns of Court when they went to dine there, and it was required that you dined as part of your training. And so this fantastic woman turned up wearing a pair of trousers, and the man in charge said, I'm afraid you can't wear those in here, madam. So she took them off and gave them to him.
A win-win.
If women wear trousers, then what's the point of them sitting on horses sideways? It's madness. We're going to hell in a handcart. Do you know what? See, John is wearing shorts and looks like a sort of trustworthy scoutmaster.
Thanks, mate.
That's good, because you're young. You see, my varicose veins, you wouldn't want to... Oh.
No,
I've got
a
trellis going on in my trousers. I'm trying to train them.
A trellis in my trousers?
I'm trying to train my veins.
I completely get you not wearing shorts, Jeremy. I just wish you'd wear pants. Now...
The other problem with shorts is most of them are only kind of knee length, you know, and for some of us chaps, that can be quite embarrassing. You know.
Trust me on this. 2 points to Hugo. In order to get round a ban on wearing shorts, boys at Gowerton Comprehensive in Swansea have been wearing skirts. Love this. The boys weren't allowed to wear shorts in the hot weather or roll their trouser legs up as temperatures hit the high 20s in Wales. That's 20 degrees Fahrenheit. Public Health England advised people to stay out of the sun between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. Fortunately, the public have had plenty of practice as winter only finished in June. John, what am I bid for the answer to this question?
This will be the man who put himself up for bids on eBay, I guess, as a way of getting around the recession and not having a job. So he put himself up for sale for 99p and didn't get any offers.
Really
sad. It's sad for me because I've sort of reading it thinking, I've got this coming. There'll come a point when people don't need the skill that I have anymore. And he's got proper skills. His thing was like, I'm IT trained. He was an estate agent and a toilet roll tester. Both involve passing shit on to other people, I guess.
Who wants to buy toilet paper that's been tested? That's really
recycled as well, so that's twice.
That's how you know it's safe, though, isn't it? You look at that quality mark. That
But he's got proper skills, and he put himself on eBay and no one bid. Do you know, if I had to do that, I've got absolutely nothing. If you fall over, I'll laugh at you. And if you're reading the paper, I might lean over your shoulder with a snide comment about something I'm really not qualified to do any better than the person I'm being snide about. But he's had a good effort. And the worst comment I saw was, because he said it's ageism, and that's why I haven't got a job, and I'm 58 and I'm skilled. And someone just put, I think it's because you live in Barrow-in-Furness. Seems really unfair. I was in Barrow-in-Furness, and I would love to disagree with that comment.
He did qualify as an estate agent, which makes you lose a little bit of sympathy for him.
Well, at least he qualified. Most people don't qualify, do they? They just go around, they think, I'm a lying turd, I might as well.
Steve Sewell, an unemployed mechanic from Barrow-in-Furness, tried to sell himself on eBay for 99 pence, but failed to get a single bid. His wife and two children laughed at him for advertising on eBay, but he had the last laugh when he sold them to a bidder in Aberystwyth. £5.99. The government are already looking at replacing all of Britain's job centres with a personalised eBay account. Actually, it's amazing what you can find on eBay. I don't know why I'm looking at Jeremy. We got him on FreeCycle. But 2 points to John. Vicky, who's still engaged even when they're engaged?
This is about people who go to the loo on their phones. No, don't go to the loo on their phone. Sorry, that's misleading. Who go into the toilet with their phone. I have done it. When I'm on the phone with my sister, I will do that, actually, because we share a lot. But it's apparently the main thing people take into the toilet with them to while away the time, because it's really boring in the toilet, apparently, and you can put your app on. And instead of FaceTime, there's something now called Arse Time. I just made that up. That's, of course, not true, but... Is that the answer?
It is the answer. For an extra point, why might peeing be on your mobile one day?
Well, Vicky's wrong when she said, I don't mean going to the toilet on your phone, because actually you can apparently make a mobile work by going to the toilet on it.
Is that strictly true?
Yes,
Jeremy
no, it's
Hardy?
True. It can run on urine.
Yeah, it can run on urine, but I think you have to do something to the urine.
No, you don't.
You just piss on your phone.
You do. That's all you have to do.
It's possible you haven't fully understood it, Jeremy, if I may say.
Here comes the science bit.
I sometimes go and sit on the lavatory if I'm having a really boring conversation on the phone.
Oh, thanks.
Because it's a sort of... It's a very silent way of showing disrespect for the person you're speaking to.
Or not so silent.
Or not so silent.
But it's not silent anyway because the acoustic changes. And I've got quite a few... I don't know if it's a male thing, but I've got quite a few men friends who think it's okay to phone me on the toilet. And I feel really prissy if I say, are you on the toilet? And they say, yeah, I'm on the toilet. And I hang up on them. And if I see people doing it in public, if I'm at a...
How would you see people doing it in public?
Well, you know, when I'm at a urinal and maybe with, someone else. Not pre-arranged. This is, I'm just in a pub or something and I'm having a toilet. And sometimes...
Having a toilet?
I'm doing...
Doing a toilet.
But if I'm in a toilet and someone comes in using it to phone a friend, I think that person has no idea what you're doing. So I go into a cubicle and I flush the toilet so that I grass them up to whoever they're talking to. And that's why I was so popular at school.
More than half of smartphone users use their devices whilst in the lavatory, according to a survey by an electronics retailer. iPads and Kindles are replacing newspapers in the loo, although they don't flush as well, so do beware. Confusingly, these figures don't apply to bog-standard phones. 2 points to Vicky. Jeremy, who's batting for the countryside?
So it's cricket, so it's about John Arlott. I don't know, that's as modern as I get with cricket.
And the other side, you know, who's batting for the countryside?
Somebody.
Oh, I know. Yes. Oh, no, is it David Gower?
It is David Gower, yes.
There you go.
I mean, I actually started talking first, and I was going to say somebody called David Gower, so that's a bit...
I'm sorry. Well, do give them the point, Sandy, because...
I'll be in charge, thank you, Vicky.
Please don't give them the point.
It was worth it just for him to have the audio now of someone saying, is it David Gower? Yes! Because I don't imagine that even happens when he rings a doorbell.
What Mr. Gower has been saying.
Doesn't he say you have to have lessons? If you're from a city, you've got to have lessons on how to be in the countryside and how to shoot. Is that right?
There should be an exam for living in the countryside, apparently. I don't know what the exam would entail. Do you find your own sister attractive? Congratulations. Oh, I've been to the countryside. It's like Centre Parks without the water slides.
Have you a wonderful sense of community spirit but surprising bigotry?
My favourite comment was how people in cities loved tarmac. What? That's what you always say. I want to live by the beach, but I can't take myself away from the tarmac.
So, I get asthma out of London and hay fever. It's when you go inland to places like Worcestershire and places that are inland, you get all asthma and hay fever and stuff if you're a town. You know, and it's loud. You say, we moved to the countryside, it's much quieter. It's the sound of shotguns and weird landowners beating animals to death with pool cues and saying, you know, they enjoy it and it's more humane than shooting them. And cider-crazed teenagers driving clapped-out Cortinas down country lanes at 80 miles an hour. It's this nightmare in the countryside. It's scary. People say, oh, it's more quiet. It's terrifying. You've been to Cornwall? Straw Dogs was a documentary.
Former England cricket captain David Gower has attacked townies for making unpopular decisions about the countryside and has called for a mandatory exam on the subject. He called for more people from the countryside to be part of politics. Finally, someone standing up for the marginalised white-landed gentry. Gow came up with his new political ideology while giving an interview to Reader's Digest. This is how all the greats started. Communism came out of an interview Karl Marx gave to the Horse and Hound. 2 points. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Rifkin.
This is from the Suffolk Free Press, and it's sent in by Ron Curtin. And the headline says, Man 26 banned from town's pubs after police assault. And the extract says, he kicked out and deliberately hit PC Wayne Sturman in the face at least 5 times. Magistrates banned him from entering all pubs and clubs in the Sudbury area, except for the Conservative Club.
Mr. Richardson.
This is from The Telegraph. It's sent in by Anne Pegram near Harlow. It's an article about how the Queen gets her Easter eggs. And it says, every year the Queen has hers made by Nick Crean, the royal warrant holder for fine chocolates. I write to Buckingham Palace, he says, and ask to lay an egg before Her Majesty.
Ms. Pepperdine.
This is from Michael Taylor, under the headline, Mark Cavendish sprayed with urine during Tour de France time trial. It's disappointing that one individual should ruin it for Mark. Some people love him, some people hate him, but to do something disrespectful like that is sad. It leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Martin Mackay from Inverness, and it's from the website Gumtree. And the ad reads, I need a psychic or exorcist to help clean a curse imposed upon me, my family and home. We have lost virtually everything and need rid of this curse. Please email if you can help. No cranks or wind-up merchants. Life is bad enough.
Let's take a look at the final score. Vicky and Jeremy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Hugo and John with 14. Before we leave you, here is a description from a packet of Profusion Gourmet Salt sent to us by Richard Ledsham.
Mineral-rich crystal salt from the foothills of the Himalayas, formed over 250 million years ago from ancient unpolluted seas. Best before April 2018.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkin, John Richardson, Vicky Pepperdine and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Zeph Soames. The chair script was written by Jack Bernhardt, Simon Littlefield and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Susan Murray and Gronje Maguire. The producer was Sam Michel.